Were I a Jew, I would be a Zionist. And my father pointed out to me, I did not need to be a Jew to be a Zionist. For I am. Israel is essential to the security of Jews worldwide.
Alright guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red-Pilled, episode 198. Deborah is, I don't know, not here quite yet. Her camera's on and it's pointed at her popcorn ceiling. There she is.
Hi!
Hey, welcome to the show. Thanks for showing up.
Well, sorry to be running late.
It's alright. Guys, we are a value for value production, and anything that you can contribute to the show, time, talent, treasure, is appreciated.
Not there.
Our numbers are going up a little bit, so we are happy that people are coming back to rejoin the show. I think last week with Dana is our highest numbers yet, so
yeah.
I hope everybody enjoyed it. What do you think of that show, Deborah?
I think that Dana is just like a font of knowledge and real easy to, you know, she's real good at speaking about the information and making it easy to understand.
Yeah, I had a good time on that show. It goes pretty deep, and there's so much stuff that's related to everything else. So, but other than that, how's your life going?
My life's going okay.
Just okay, huh?
Just okay. Yeah.
My life's great.
Good.
Yeah. But yeah, we're waiting for our guest here. It's 5 o'clock Pacific time. On Tuesday, the
17th.
But yeah, any big news in the world that you're concentrating on?
Well, I've been trying to bone up on what's going on in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's a complicated subject, but hopefully we are going to be getting to the bottom of it today, because we have our guest on, The Odd Man Out.
Mm-hmm.
He's connecting to audio. He's there. Odd Man, are you there?
I am here, man. I am here.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I've got like a ton of pop-ups. Sorry, I'm trying to get them all to go away. Okay.
Cool, man.
Hey, man.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's great to see you both.
Yeah,
good
I think
to see you.
The last time we had you on the show with Deborah, Deborah had to bone out early to go get her second maggot jab.
So
was that how long ago that was?
Yeah,
jeez.
And you're still alive, surprisingly.
It's like BC and AD. Now it's
BJ, before jab,
BJ
after jab,
AJ.
It has been a while. Yeah.
Odd Man, what's been going on with you?
Oh man, just same old. I am now a grandfather.
Wow.
As of about 2 weeks ago. So that's the biggest change in my life. I'm officially old now.
That's
Thank you.
awesome.
I think you're
Thank you,
probably right
guys.
around the same age as I am, and I'm trying to have my first child right now. So,
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing
yeah.
wrong with that.
But yeah, that's the difference between where you're from and where I'm from. I grew up in on the West Coast where families are demonized and everyone's told to cut their junk off and not have kids. And that's what I did, and then I had to like reattach them surgically, and then it's way harder to have kids after you do that. So that's what I'm going through right now. But
So baby questions. Is it
Yes.
is your grandchild nearby or far away?
Nearby, about 30 minutes away.
Oh,
Yeah.
nice. And
That's amazing.
everybody's
Actually,
doing well.
he's doing great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, they actually live in the house that I grew up in, so it's kind of neat. The house was in really bad shape and they've been working on it for like 2 years, and it's still got a long way to go, but they're moved in now, so that's good.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what we're dealing with right now too. We moved into a dilapidated farmhouse, bought a homestead, and yeah, we're fixing it up though, so it's getting there.
Good deal. Yeah, this place I live now was dilapidated. It was in really bad shape. So it's like an ongoing process, but it's kind of fun at the same time.
Yeah. You're in Tennessee, correct?
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, everybody from here moved there. Do you ever get scared that you guys are becoming Austin 2.0?
Oh yeah, for sure. Everybody I run into is from California. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I live close to Portland, Oregon now, and everybody, like all the Oregon truthers up and moved to Tennessee, 'cause it's where you're supposed to go. And then, right after they got there, I started seeing a whole bunch of trans brunches and things happening all over the place, but I guess that's just to be expected in any big city, even down there.
It is. We have a pretty big college here, the University of Tennessee. So I think a lot of stuff kind of spawns out of there too.
Yeah, but I mean, people like equate. I live in Oregon. People equate
Right,
where
right.
us every part of Oregon with Portland. It's a huge state.
Yeah.
I live an hour and 10 minutes away from here, and it's like cattle ranches and weed farms with Trump signs all over them. So it's totally different. Anywhere you go is like that. Even in California, you get 30 minutes outside of San Francisco and you start headed towards the I-5. Once you get into the Central Valley there, it's like you're out in the middle of the country with a bunch of, rural people. So, but we're not here to talk about, well, I guess maybe we are here to talk about American identity politics today, as it is. But I think I kind of want to start doing this thing when I have people on. I kind of want to just learn a little bit about their history and what got them into researching. We're trying to make a hard turn into just mostly parapolitics on the show. We've covered every wild, wacky out there, conspiracy stuff that we could get into. We did a bunch of current event stuff too, but the parapolitics, and we've gotten really into Program to Kill lately, and all that stuff is what's really piquing our interest. But what we're going to talk about today is also very, very interesting to me, and very pertinent at this point in time. But yeah, just like, what's a little bit of your history, like how you grew up and got into politics? I know a little bit about where you came from, but why don't you tell everybody?
Well, I had kind of a strange childhood. I mean, not crazy, but I grew up in a very Christian household, like a lot of kids from the South that are my age and a little bit older. And my grandfather was a minister,
We're
and so we
talking
went
Baptist.
Baptist, yeah, Southern
Okay.
Baptist. We went to this tiny little church, and my stepdad's grandparents were the caretakers of the church and all that kind of stuff. It was really kind of neat now that I look back on it. Of course, I took it for granted then, but after my grandfather died when I was nine, along probably maybe a year or so later, we just kind of stopped going to church and we hardly ever went after that. I think my mom had grown up in a really strict household. She wasn't anti-religion, but I think she just kind of had enough of the the really strict aspects of it. And so we would go to church every now and then after that, but not a lot. But I actually wanted to be a minister when I was smaller. I mean, my grandparents, I would go over to their house. They lived next door, and I had a little suit, and I would go over there and take my Bible, and I would preach. And, for a long time, I said I wanted to be a pastor. And, but as I got to be a teenager, about 13 or
Did you
14,
have the Southern Baptist hair back then?
well, I probably had a bowl cut, to be honest with
Okay,
you.
got it.
So I didn't have the slicked back,
Yeah.
But yeah, but I ended up being a teenager and getting into heavy metal and punk and stuff like that, and then
Yeah.
ended up being in a band. So kind of went the opposite direction of what I'd planned on being as a child. And my faith never left me completely. Always felt kind of out of place with some of the people I hung out with, although I liked a lot of the people. But I definitely knew at the core that I had more traditional beliefs than almost everyone that I ran into. And but I wasn't really interested in politics, even though we decided to call the band The Conspiracy. I actually did get that out of the Bible, where it says something like, do not call conspiracy everything this world calls conspiracy. We were looking through the Bible to find cool names, because like
Yeah.
especially 80s bands, a lot of those heavy metal bands took their names right out of the Bible, so
Yeah.
we were kind
Testament,
of,
all
yeah.
sorts. So, yeah.
So we were looking, and we found that, and I was like, that stuck, because we were hearing about conspiracies in the news at that time, because that was mid-90s, and of course you had the Whitewater conspiracy. You're hearing about that all the time. So anyway, long story short, I was in the band for about 10 years, and we weren't really political, but I just started listening to political talk radio, like Savage and Rush a little bit. And maybe 3 months later, that's when 9/11 happened. And I stayed glued to the TV for months. I didn't even know the difference between Democrat and Republican at the time. I just knew that I was interested in this, and I wanted to find out what the heck happened. And I just couldn't believe it. Like a lot of people, we were kind of stunned. It kind of shook our world. So yeah, I got into politics right there. I think we had like MySpace around that time, or a couple of years later, and I was even talking about politics on there, and people were
Yeah.
like, "What are you doing?"
I
But
can't even remember the format of like what you did on MySpace.
yeah, it was weird. It had the little blocks, and
Yeah, you could have eight friends
yeah,
and you could put a song on there.
right.
And did you make posts?
Yeah, I think you could make little posts.
And everybody could see it. So you could
Yeah.
be friends with more than eight people, but your top eight were pictured there.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
right. I forgot about that. Yeah, and I guess it kind of scrolled like Facebook, but I feel like things were a little bit like with Facebook and Twitter and everything else. It's like almost like everything just disappears immediately,
Yeah.
you can't remember anything, 'cause you got the scrolling screen, and I feel like it wasn't quite like that. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look, but yeah, it was, I got into politics, and I was very conservative, because I bought into all the stuff that they said, about 9/11 and radical Muslims and different things like that. And
So
yeah,
we're
it was
talking
so,
like neocon conservative, right?
yes.
Yeah.
And after a few years, I started getting a little bit deeper into things. I started feeling like, well, these guys, they talk a good game, but they drop the ball every time, they get power. So are they even serious, the conservatives? And I ran into a few years later, a podcast called No Agenda, which I think's
Yep.
been out now for, I don't know, maybe they may be going on like 12
16 years,
years or
16 years, like next week. Like show
oh, wow.
1600 is 16 years.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one for me. A lot of people found Alex Jones, but I found No Agenda. And
When did you find No Agenda? What?
I want to say 2011.
Wow, that's early, 'cause I listened to Joe Rogan as my first podcast, and I didn't get all that figured out till 2015, just because the app was on the iPhone, you know.
Yeah. Well, I when they put Romney out as a Republican candidate, I didn't like McCain either, but like Romney, I was like, the Republicans don't even like this guy, and they've been open about that. Now he's the candidate, and all they all have great things to say about him. He's the man. And I, you know, it finally kind of hit me. Oh, they're gonna back the guy no matter who he is or what he says or what he's done, you know, in his past. When the guy's the guy on, you know, either side, they're gonna back him. It doesn't matter. So I couldn't get behind that, dude. I said, I'm not voting this time. And was listening to No Agenda.
That was 2012, right? The second Obama election.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I was listening to No Agenda, and they were breaking down like official documents and things like that. And that really appealed to me because I'm like, well, this is tangible. This is something you can go to. You can see like declassified CIA documents and stuff like that. You can see things happening here. You know, there's a record. It's not just people saying, well, those Democrats, it's all their fault, or those Republicans. So that appealed to me. And then I think about that time I found, and I don't know how I found it or who mentioned it, but the book Propaganda by Edward Bernays, kind of laid out, I think he wrote that in, I want to say 1928. And he basically laid out in that book how the government had already figured out how to control everyone through the means that they had at the time, which was mainly radio. He did talk about motion pictures too, of course, magazines and newspapers and things like that. So
yeah, because if you remember, if you've ever seen the old footage, and like my dad would tell me about it, they would go to like what they call like the serial. They'd have like a movie every, like a different part of like a series every week at the movies before there's TV. Mm-hmm. And they'd always have they have like a newsreel at the start of it.
Yeah.
Like a full on propaganda newsreel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think from there I found out, again, I don't remember where I found it, but I think it might've been through Edward Bernays, cause I think he was affiliated with it as well. But I figured out that, well, I know what it was. It was a podcast, which is still going today. Professor CJ, Prof CJ, what's it? Dangerous History Podcast.
Oh yeah, I've heard that guy before on some other shows. Yeah.
So he does like a long form podcast of a very meticulous historical content. And I found the one that he did, it was on Wilson. I think he's done like a huge series on Wilson now, but he mentioned the Committee on Public Information, which I believe Bernays also worked for. And that was basically a department that Wilson created solely to propagandize the American people to be willing to go along with World War One, you know, with America's part in World War One, because up to that point, we were kind of non-interventionist. We didn't want to get embroiled in all these foreign entanglements, as the founder said.
Yeah.
And you see how that's worked out for us. It's been horrible. But yeah, he created this whole department, and you had the top PR guys from all over to come up with propaganda, and they would use it in films and radio, TV, you know, advertising of all sorts.
It's very pertinent now as well. Was Bernays involved in like the Huns and the babies on bayonets thing? Because that was kind of the propaganda for World War One. I can't remember if that was to get us involved or if that was to get England involved. I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think that might have been more directed towards England. I think that might have been actually British propaganda, but I I'm not sure specifically what they did. I know there's one thing they had, and I always get the number wrong. I want to say 3 Minute Men. It was like 70,000 men that they hired to just go out in random places in public and give a, I think it was 3 minute speech on a reason why America should be joining this war. And so that was revolutionary at the time as well. And you had Walter Lippmann, who was, he was kind of the Bernays before Bernays, because he was writing, I think he had a whole bunch of books, but one was called Phantom Public. I think one was just called Public Opinion, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, he kind of figured out the Bernays thing even before Bernays. And so he was involved with it. And this guy, George Creel, was the one that he kind of controlled that organization. He wrote a book later on called How We Advertised America. But anyway, it literally took the whole country that was hesitant, did not want to get involved in that war. And it, you know, within like a year, everybody had changed their minds, or enough people who, that they could get away with it. And anyone who didn't want us to be in a part of that war was condemned. There were even threats of arrest and things like that. So they really did a hoodoo on the American people.
Yeah, wasn't there? There's I forget who it was. There's some famous commie who was like protesting the draft or something. Did they draft for World War One?
You know, I can't remember if they did or not. That's a good question.
But some guy got thrown in prison for protest or for like marching against that. I can't remember which one. Commie guy. But
that does sound familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, and then World War II came around, and it was still kind of we were still kind of isolationists, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Until Pearl Harbor, and there's fishy stuff around that.
Oh yeah, I just listened to I re-listened to the old James Corbett. That's right, James. Yeah. Right. I always get his first name mixed up because I know somebody else named Corbett, and it starts with a J as well. But his old episode on that on Pearl Harbor with I think the author was named Robert Stinnett. He's probably passed away now because he was very old at the time. But he wrote the book that kind of gave all that information on how they knew that Pearl Harbor, the attack was going to happen. They wanted it to happen. They wanted the Japanese to attack. They wanted to provoke them so they could go to war because they would have that excuse. Basically the same thing they did with the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam.
Was there any provocation on our side towards the Japanese to entice them into the Pearl Harbor attack? Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, they were, I believe if I remember correctly, they had some horrible sanctions on them.
Okay.
And they were killing them financially, which, you know, they say that's the first, really, every time we go to war, they usually have a sanction war already going on in the process. So I think that was one of the main things.
Yeah, it sounds familiar as of right now, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah, never turns out well. But yeah, so I guess Pearl Harbor was real, but there was a chance that we had foreknowledge that it might happen, and it was allowed. Maybe something was allowed to happen so that we would to curry the favor of the public for us to enter the war.
Yeah. And they actually blamed it on an admiral and I believe a general. These guys that served their whole life, you know, their adult life in the military, stellar records. They stripped them of their stripes and eventually these guys fought them. And there's actually court, or at least there used to be on YouTube, you could see court footage of them, and they won their stripes back and they got their names cleared finally. But, you know, most people will never know that unless they watched or listened to the James Corbett episode. So,
yeah,
really interesting history there.
Yeah, his whole he's done a bunch of little documentaries. I'm not sure if they're even on YouTube anymore, but I think he did, like, you know, the big oil ones and all that stuff, and talked about the different wars and things like that. They're really good. He did some Bill Gates ones that were really good too. But yeah, then after that we get Gulf of Tonkin, which, you know, if you've read Dave McGowan, we know all about Jim Morrison's dad and his role as Admiral Morrison in Gulf of Tonkin, which was what it was, you know, same thing, real attack. But or I can't even remember the details of Gulf of Tonkin. Did it really happen?
You know, I'll have to go back and look at that. I know there's been CIA documents that's been released, you know, over like the last 10 years, and there's definitely negligence there for sure. But I can't remember exactly what happened.
They said that Vietnamese boats fired on American ships, I think, and all that was out there was fishing boats or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that got us into Vietnam, and then, like, that's personal for you too, because your dad was in Vietnam, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he got drafted, and he always had, as a lot of the guys did, especially the guys that got drafted, you know, they had a hard time with that when they came back, because you know, it didn't make any sense, and you know, it still doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, my dad had skirted it for a long time. He went to college, you know, and then I think he graduated in like 66 or 67. And they were like, we don't care if you're college educated anymore. Everybody's going. So he's like, my number's up. And he went and joined the National Guard, you know, so he didn't have to go. So, it's awful. Awful to think that, you know, that's, in my opinion, worse than slavery, almost. Like, At least the slaves weren't required to go murder people.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I read, I want to say James Perloff, Shadows of Power. I read that a few years ago.
That's the CFR one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got a pretty good section in there about Vietnam. Honestly, didn't know a lot about it until I read that, but it's really good. I recommend anyone that wants to learn a little bit more about it. It's just so clear that they didn't have aims of even winning that. And it was what they could get done during war, because everybody's scared and freaked out and there's all kinds of chaos.
Everything that they could sneak through, right?
Yeah, and it reminds me of the War on Terror, because obviously they didn't have any long-term goal. I mean, they didn't have any, their objectives were never clear. I don't think they wanted to even win, you know, the way
everything their objectives went down. Abroad weren't clear, but they might have been here. Like,
yeah.
It was weird how the Patriot Act just showed up one day, however many pages that is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, they've got Joe Biden on, I think it was when he was still a senator, and he's bragging about how he drafted the Patriot Act before 9/11. It was called something else. It's like, well, they knew what they were going to do a long time before 9/11 happened. They already had that in the works.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got an old copy of like a first press copy of that. It's not a rare book, but I got like a copy of that Shadows of Power. Is that the Perloff one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From 1988, I think, when it came out. And it has a list of all the CFR members in there at the time. And I went in, I found Brian Callen, the comedian.
Oh, really?
I found his dad in there. Yeah.
I know Sam teases him about CFR a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's why, because his dad was a CFR member. So
that's funny.
Yeah. He was also like the head of Citibank in the Middle East in the 80s and 90s. So, you know, it's got like John Perkins vibes all over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then if we were going to keep going with false flags, you know, we could probably figure some out for like Libya and Iran-Contra and all that, but you know, we get the Gulf Wars in the 1990 or whenever, and we got one that Deborah and I have extensively covered is the babies in incubators with Naira.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Naira went in front of Congress, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And there was a whole bunch of congressmen who weren't going to endorse us going to war with Iraq. And then Naira comes in and says she was a volunteer at the hospital. The Iraqi troops came in and threw all these Kuwaiti babies who'd been in incubators on the floor and watched them die. She cries. And then all these guys that said they weren't going to vote for whatever military action we went into, they said they weren't going to do it. And then they saw that testimony and changed their minds. And it comes out later that she is the Kuwaiti ambassador to the US's daughter, and it's all made up.
Wow.
And it's funny, because you go back to World War I, and I think you could even go back farther into ancient history, and there's always something, you know, babies on bayonets. Now what do we got? We have 40 babies who are cut out of their mother's wombs and then beheaded, you know,
right?
Which has already been proven false. Even though there's footage. Did you see? I think they played it on No Agenda recently. The footage of Joe Biden saying he saw it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said he saw it.
Oh man, there's no, you know, really, you know. I try to remind people, but you know, the average people just don't think about it because they are so emotional. But in the time of war or the buildup before a war, you know, the propaganda ramps up, you know, tenfold, and you cannot believe any of these people. Like, you know, the Ben Shapiro's of the world. I mean,
he's completely unhinged right now. He's talking about reverting to the rope and stuff like that. It's wild.
Yeah, I saw today, I can't remember the guy's name on Twitter, but he worked with Shapiro. I'm blanking on where they worked together at. It wasn't a Daily Wire. It was Breitbart. They worked together at Breitbart. And he said that he, in his tweet, one day saw Ben talking to Mossad agents. They were well-known Mossad agents. I guess Breitbart is affiliated with that anyway, the way this tweet kind of was laid out. And he asked him about it. And he said, yeah, I stay in close contact with those guys. So you have to wonder if some of these guys aren't getting paid to have a certain view and be very passionate in the public about certain things.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know that the CIA is involved in the American media and film and entertainment and everything like that. So
Yeah,
why wouldn't,
definitely.
you know, there are probably people that are going back and forth between Mossad and CIA anyways. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, that's what they call the fog of war, you know, just nobody knowing anything. And they also say the first thing to die in war is the facts. So, like, anybody that either side that says that thinks that they know what's going on right now, just think back to what you thought after 9/11, the second day after 9/11, or you know, the start of the Iraqi war or WMDs or anything like that. And it's you know, it's wild. It's really crazy that you know, you've done this what 11 or 12 part series that's ongoing right now called Those We Don't Speak Of. And I it's so much information that you've put forth and all this crazy research that you do. It's pretty wild that, well, not wild, I guess not wild because they're always at war over there, but that I asked you to come on and talk about it, and then the date that happens to come up is, you know, it's a week after this whatever's going on in Israel and Palestine happens. So
Yeah, isn't that wild?
yeah, you asked me if I wanted an easy out, and I don't know, we could just talk about the Masons or the Pilgrim Society again or something like that, but I said no, I think this is a good opportunity to get into it. And I think like you're as upsetting and hard to listen to as some of the facts that you put forth, it's also important for people like me who have a serious bias against the people in power in Israel. It's important for me to realize that there's regular people that aren't involved. There's all sorts of different sects, and that Judaism is as splintered up and different as, you can't just say Judaism like you could just say Christianity, you know. There's over 2,000 sects of Christianity, you know. Like, I'm Orthodox Christian, the original one. There's the same thing for Judaism, then there it goes off and off and off and off and all sorts of different ones. I don't know if there's any good ones or any bad ones, or I know there's definitely some bad ones, but I thought you know, maybe we could get into a little bit of that. Where do you think's a good place to start out? And as I constantly remind people, Deborah has a J card, and you say in your first episode of Those We Do Not Speak Of, you also have a J card. So I'm the only one on here that should not be allowed to speak. So
No, you should be allowed to speak. Come
yeah, I
on.
know.
Well, it's the biggest subject I think one could possibly take on, and I had no idea what I was getting into. I knew it would be a big subject because I'd looked a little bit into just various conspiracy theories or things I thought was conspiracy and things that I'd heard in the truther community, but I kind of put that aside and said, no way, because when I start that, it's going to be something I'm going to have to commit a lot of time to because I don't want to say anything that's not true.
Yeah. Let me ask you this before we get into
Yeah,
it. When you
sure.
were in your Michael Savage, Rush, neocon days, did you have an opinion on Israel, like we should, you know, be backing them or anything like what they would say?
Oh, yeah, totally. Blindly. And, kind of growing up in a Baptist church, it was almost like a given that you just, Israel, you protect them, you honor them no matter what. There was never anything negative, and that's a
So
whole nother rabbit hole.
Christian Zionism was a fact of your church growing up.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't talked about a lot, but there, I do remember, a lot of people say that this modern Christian Zionism came out of the Scofield Reference Bible, which was the first Bible to have references that basically explained what certain verses meant, which to me, I kind of reference Bibles kind of make me a little nervous when I think about that. Now that I've learned that, I'm almost like, why don't you just write another book and one can turn to that? Because this is, a book that we believe is holy and everybody's got their opinion. But anyway, long story
Can I
short, I
stop
do.
you and ask, what is the Scofield Reference Bible?
Well, a fellow by the name of C.I. Scofield, he was an American, and you could do a whole show on him. Really an interesting guy, but he had been in trouble for gambling. He had went and tried to become a lawyer and failed the bar, just different things like that. He actually abandoned his first wife and two daughters, but somehow he got in with the some kind of club. It was called, I believe it was called the Lotus Club. Now, I've not done a lot of research into it, but it was supposed to be like this exclusive club for elites, and I think a lot of those guys were Jewish. So the thinking is that maybe he was approached at that point, and he began to preach, and he said he got saved while he was in jail and became a Christian, which a lot of people do, and it's a lot of times not real, but you know, we all have our, you know, sometimes it is. But anyway, long story short, somehow he got in with this club and then got connected to Oxford, which, you know, the famous college in England, and somehow wrote these references to the King James Bible that were very Zionist friendly. Like, they would explain things in a way that made Christians believe that they should always take the, you know, Israel side or the Jews side. This was even before modern Israel was created. I think it was 1909 when it was first published. And there was also these dispensations, like seven dispensations that he said, like God would approach people at different times and give them kind of like a thing that he wanted them to do, a purpose in these different times. And anyway, there were all these footnotes, and it really changed the meaning of a lot of the verses. And so, you know, after a while, it became popular. Like, at first it was very controversial. And I remember being a kid, and I remember people in church, after church and before church, would be arguing, because some people were for it, some people were against the Scofield Bible. And, you know, coming back into Christianity in the last few years, I mean, really getting back into church, I was going to a church that was so Zionist, it was unbelievable. I had to stop going, and I hated it because my family really liked it. I liked the pastor.
Did they have a flag?
You know, I think they did, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
And he does a podcast on the side that's so pro-Zionist, it's unbelievable. And I would listen to that too, and it really turned me against some of the things he said. I couldn't believe it. But yeah, it's so that whole reference thing really popularized this idea of Christian Zionism. It wasn't exactly a thing before that. And I think it was in World War II that the term Judeo-Christian came about. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was traced back to an article in the New York Times. So it became a way to kind of like get the Christians to evangelical Christians, that is, to kind of blanketly always defend Israel no matter what they did, especially once they became a state. It just became like it's the norm now. Like, I follow a lot of these evangelical pastors, these popular ones, and it's just unbelievable.
John, what's the guy's name? John Hagee. He's like a mega church pastor who's been on TV and stuff for a long time, and he's in what I supposedly like the biggest of the pro-Zionist, you know, mega church guys. Probably I just know about him because you know Buck Johnson from Counterflow.
I've seen the name.
Yeah, he grew up going to his church and knows all about that. So I've heard about that. But yeah, that's just crazy that there's actually I've seen, you know, the pictures online of the churches with the Israeli flags in them and stuff like that. Another thing that I've found recently that was pretty interesting is a lot of people are getting into the case of Leo Frank and the forming of the ADL in I think the early 1900s, right? And are you familiar with this case, Deborah?
ADL, no.
Well, you know what the ADL is, right? the Anti-Defamation League.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I do
Yeah.
know that.
So in the early 1900s, there was this, well, I guess I don't need to tell the whole story, but I guess what I found from learning about that story is that anti-Semitism wasn't ever like a thing in the South. Like you hear of all the, I don't know if you know what people outside of the South that are like, in these liberal, leftist, wealthy areas, odd man, but they definitely look down on the South and think that you're just like
Oh,
racist
sure, yeah.
country bumpkins. But they include anti-Semitism in that, and it's just given that that's the way it was, and it wasn't like a thing. And so this guy, Leo Frank, Deborah, he raped and murdered this 13-year-old girl. He was
I
the
didn't
head,
know
he
that,
was the
yeah.
head of a pencil factory, and she was an employee there. And what happens is he gets convicted by like, and there's like five Jewish people on the grand jury that decide to take it to trial. And then on the actual jury that convicts him, there's two. He gets sentenced to death, and then he gets lynched. And then the ADL forms around this, and then now the common. There's so many books. If you try to look it up, like the real story, it's just books and books and books. Endorsed by the ADL that say that he was innocent, that he was lynched, even though they like just tried to blame it on these two black guys. And the people that have actually done the best research and work on it is the Nation of Islam. And they've published a book called what's it called? I think it's called The Lynching of a Guilty Man, like the story of Leo Frank. But yeah, from that learning about that, I found out that the treasurer of the Confederacy was a Jewish guy who like had his picture on some of the not greenbacks, but their form the Confederate currency that was around at the time. And yeah, it wasn't even there's some of the original Klan was Jewish. And it yeah, anti-Semitism wasn't a thing in the South until probably the what would you say, Odd Man, like the early to mid 20th century?
I mean, I really don't know a lot about it, but I can tell you living here, and I've lived in some really small towns too. I can count maybe two or three people I've ever heard in my life here say anything negative about Jews. It's been just the opposite. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I think that that particular thing, there may have been certain areas or certain states that had problems like that, but I've just never run into that. I've heard people say that. I know that's kind of a thing that people say about the South, and even with the with racism towards blacks, there's a pretty good, I think there's like 17%, maybe 20% blacks in my town. And I'm not going to say there's never been any problems, but a lot of black and white people work together, and I've never really, like it's been years since I've ran into someone who is genuinely racist. I know it still exists, but I'm just saying I think that it's portrayed much worse, in the media and kind of like in pop culture than it is, if that makes sense.
And even if there are like racist people in the South, like they're still equipped to get along with other people and like work together with them because they have to. Like all the people out here that are, in these really wealthy liberal areas, they're like the most segregated places you could ever imagine,
And I'm noticing here in a lot of the nicer neighborhoods, when especially during the last election, driving through several of the nicer neighborhoods over that time, I would see a lot of these, rainbow flags or the flags that say, I think they might be rainbow too, I can't remember, but I know I think maybe they were black.
In this house,
Those have, yeah.
all the ones,
So I was seeing those a lot in these ritzier neighborhoods, and I was
that
like,
are, yeah, the non-integrated areas, correct? It's out here, like I live in Oregon. There's not very many black people at all, but if you go to like the Bay Area where Deborah lives, there's whole cities that are, no go. Like, right, Deborah lives in a really, really expensive area, But if you go across the bridge, you end up in this town called Richmond, and it's like, it's a tough place, and so but I guess yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but I just thought that that's an interesting case, Deborah. We'll have somebody on to talk to us about the case of Leo Frank. A lot of people have been covering it lately just because the ADL's been so prominent and like they're an outspoken and condemning people, and they carry a lot of weight with what they say. And I think a lot of people are finally like waking up to it and standing up to it a little bit. So in part one, Odd Man, of Those We Don't Speak Of, you kind of get into the different sects of Judaism. Do you have it off the top of your head that we could talk a little bit about those?
Well, like the different types of Jews, basically, or the religion itself.
The different types, the Ashkenazi versus the all that.
So, the Ashkenazim or Ashkenaz, those are considered the Jews of Germany and northern France. You have the Sephardim; they're the Jews of Iberia, the Spanish diaspora. And then you have the Mizraim; they're the Eastern Jews or Oriental Jews, which you don't hear much about, and I honestly don't know a lot about. And then you have the Ethiopian Jews, which I think we've heard just before this whole new war kicked off, that Israel had kicked out a bunch of Ethiopian Jews.
Wow.
I think there's a bit of a controversy about that, and I'm not sure about the details. But yeah, you have those four, and there's even other. I've read that there at one time there were Arab Jews, Iraqi Jews, and things like that. But yeah, those are the four main ones, and of course the Ashkenazim, or they're the majority of the Jews on the earth. I think 90, I want to say 90, 80, 90%, and they're just about 90% of the Jews here in America are Ashkenazi, about 10% Sephardim, and then the others I'm not real sure. It's a very small amount. Israel is about half and half with the Sephardim and the Ashkenazim. So that's the two main ones. And nearly everybody here that you see in positions of power in the government and in the private sector are Ashkenazi Jews. And it's kind of interesting because they've done DNA tests in the last few years. Even a Hebrew University professor had done one of these DNA tests kind of to see what the origins of the Ashkenazi were. And they claim that 80% of them really were European and had no ties to the Middle East whatsoever. And of course that was eventually debated, but if you believe that DNA doesn't lie, then that is interesting because of those being the ones in power. And that would be who I would be connected to as well, the Ashkenazim. But pretty interesting stuff. As far as Jews, as a populace in the world, they make up like about 2% of the people in the whole entire world. It's a small amount of people. But then when you start looking at the people in power, like I just mentioned, it's pretty amazing, especially media, of course, business. But I've been looking at the presidential administrations, and especially like the last three, well, four actually, George W. Bush, Obama, of course, Trump, and Biden. And Trump had quite a few, and the ones he did have were very influential. But the other three administrations, all the main people nearly were Ashkenazi Jews. And it's just interesting, like one of the things I say, I don't want to get off topic, but one of the things I always say, because I was still in that whole neocon phase when the Obama administration made the so-called nuclear deal with Iran. And of course the conservatives hated that because they said that Obama hated Israel, which was, how could he hate Israel when like I think 70% of his main administration were Jews, so it didn't make sense. But you would never hear that in mainstream media. And the same thing kind of with Biden right now, with the $6 million or whatever it is, giving it back to Iran.
It's got that number, man.
Dude, yeah, I've got a show. I'm waiting after I get a couple of these other shows done. But I'm doing a whole show on the significance of that number, the historical significance, going along with the same subject, because it's mind blowing.
So Deborah, you know what we're talking about, right?
No,
so
6,000.
You know what, if you say 6 million and you're talking about Jews, what do you think of?
Yeah, the Holocaust.
So Odd Man, help me out here. It goes back way far into history and maybe even into the Talmud and things like that, that number 6 million comes up over and over and over again, right?
Yeah, it's 6 million or 60 million, or yeah, just the number six is in so much of the literature, the historic literature, even before World War II. I mean, it's really strange. There's something to it. I haven't quite put my finger on it. That's why I'm kind of holding off on doing the show. But I found a book that went over just a lot of the historic documents that had mentioned that number in. Most of them were pre-World War II, and it was just like, what is going on here? This is because I don't know, I don't claim to know a lot about it, but gematria is a thing that, is popular with Orthodox Judaism and also Freemasonry. And numerology is such a huge part of Orthodox Judaism that numbers play a huge part. And I've seen like a lot of our contemporaries, but guys that are like way bigger than us doing podcasts, making fun of people for talking about gematria. But if you actually look at these Orthodox Jewish websites like Chabad.org and those, they talk about numerology all the time, and it's everything. Like, it's extremely important. Like,
Do they
they'll
use
say,
it to predict prophecy and things like that?
absolutely,
Wow.
absolutely. Yeah, they'll say that, I'm trying to remember one that blew my mind. The Moshiach, which is Messiah, and I forget what that number amounts or what that word kind of adds up to in gematria, because each letter is a certain number. It represents a certain number, but that also it's the same number that the Hebrew word nakash adds up to, which is snake. And so they say that Messiah and the snake are the same thing. So there's a serpent Messiah that represents the coming Messiah, which but not Jesus, but it's just crazy. It's all kinds of this numerology that is very significant in their belief system. So anyway, I don't want to get off track there, but it's very important to them, and I think we should pay attention to it.
What are another thing you went into, what are some of the, well, actually, let me look. I got a bunch of notes and questions written down.
Sure.
Do you know when we get into what's the difference between the Talmud and the Torah?
Well, the Torah is the first five books of the Bible, or that's what it's supposed to be. And the Talmud is, I think it's like 60 books altogether. It's humongous. And what it is these commentaries by these rabbis that spans a space of hundreds of years, arguing back and forth about what the verses in the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, actually mean. A lot of it's just ridiculous, but
Some
there
of
are
it's
some of
really,
them.
really disturbing as well. Like there's
Yes.
parts where they say that like having sex with a 2-year-old girl is no different than poking her in the eye and things like that.
Some
Where does
really
it say
horrible stuff
that? In the Talmud.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, it's some of the stuff in there is insane. That it's hard to believe, but you can actually look it up on official websites like Safara or Safaria.org, I think, or .com. But there's all kinds of websites, but that has the entire Talmud, and you can search it. Like one, I turned to a random one the other day, or actually it's been a few months ago now. I thought I'll just turn to a random verse in the Talmud and just see what it says. And it was talking about if a rabbi's daughter commits adultery, should we stone her or cut off her nose? So some of the things in there are horrible. They say Gentiles or animals, Gentiles should be killed for reading the Torah. It just some of the craziest stuff. And then if you say anything about it, then you're called anti-Semitic, but you're like, wait a minute, this is your book. Oh, they've taken it out of context. Well, that's what it says. So there's tons of stuff in there that is really disturbing and really inhumane. But the what I've learned also is with a lot of these Orthodox, and there's different sects in the Hasidic realm of Orthodox Judaism, but as far as I can tell, most of them, if not all of them, follow the Kabbalah, which is mystical Judaism. And so they consider the first five books of the Bible, the Torah, but they also consider the Zohar, which is one of the main texts of the Kabbalah, part of the Torah, another book called the Sefer Yetzirah, which is kind of their story of creation. It's called the Torah. A book called the Bahir is part of the Torah. I mean, it goes on and on. So they have a huge, once you really start to dive past the first couple layers, they consider a bunch of their books Torah. And what they also say is that each verse of the Bible can have basically endless meanings according to the rabbi that reads them. So as soon as I read that, I thought, well, if it can mean anything, then it means nothing, because, you know, there's even one verse by, I'm trying to remember his name. He's one of the most famous rabbis. And they tried to say that he wrote the Zohar, which is, you know, the main book of Kabbalah. But as they got to investigating it, they realized it was like the year 300 AD, I think. It was actually like the year 1300 that it came out. And this one rabbi, Moses de Leon, tried to say that, well, I was basically inhabited by this rabbi, Shimon Bar Yochai, that was his name. I was inhabited by him, and he helped me write this book, which is very Crowley-esque.
He was possessed.
Exactly. Because that's the same thing Crowley said. That's the same thing that Alice Bailey from the Theosophical Society said. Same thing, I believe, Blavatsky said. Kind of the same thing that, the founder of Mormonism, Joseph Smith, said. You know, he basically said this angel Moroni, you know, kind of inhabited him. So there's you can see this trend with these people, but... Anyway, yeah, long story short, there's a verse in there that says that if you do read the Torah just outright and believe it outright from what it says, you are going to hell. So it's just some of the craziest things that I never thought in a million years I would find when I started looking into this stuff. It's never ending, because so many of these rabbis have went on to write books that are somewhat based on the Bible, and they've changed the meanings, and it's just unbelievable. And they're very well respected, and a lot of these books, the teachings from them are taught. And and if you say anything negative about it, you're a horrible person. So really wild. I don't think that probably 90% of the public have any clue about any of this stuff.
Yeah. So what is the Talmud used for, like, currently?
Well, if you're an Orthodox Jew, like, you know, Ben Shapiro and others, and I don't know what sect he attends, which synagogue. I know I've seen him at the Chabad synagogues doing speeches and stuff, but I don't think he's a Chabad Jew, and that's another form of Hasidism. But I think that so there's 613 laws, and they think that you should follow all those laws. And if you follow them, you will basically be perfect, illuminated. You know, you will have apotheosis. And so the Talmud is basically what they say is oral Torah. Like, you had the Torah, which was written down, but before that you had just oral Torah, which I'm sure, you know, that makes sense. But I don't believe that the Talmud is the oral Torah, because as you start to study it, you see that it was written in a span of several, I think, like over 1,000 years. So it couldn't have been the oral Torah, because they were making it up as they went. There's also the Mishnah, which I think is commentary also on the Torah. And that was written by Maimonides, or sometimes they call him Rambam, was probably the most famous philosopher and rabbi in Jewish history. I mean, and he did write some prolific stuff, but he also wrote some very racist and very anti-Christian stuff as well. So he wrote the Mishnah, and that is a big deal as well. That's part of the Torah as well. So yeah, it's there's so much in there. And there's also this idea of the Noahide laws, which a lot of these Orthodox are pushing, the Orthodox Jews, and especially the Chabad Jews. And this is an idea. They say that, I can't remember if it was after or pre-flood, that God handed these laws to Noah, and there's a ton of them, and there's sub-laws. And I've got a book on PDF. It's called The Divine Code. If anyone wants to check that out, I found it on Anna's archive. It's like 800 plus pages, but it tells everything in there that if they can implement these Noahide laws, this whole system will be constructed. And so the Jews have to go by the 613 laws and a whole bunch of sub laws. And the Gentiles have seven laws, the seven Noahide laws. And these laws, if you break them, call for capital punishment. But then they try to kind of whitewash over that a little bit. But one of the main things is idolatry. And they say that if you are a Christian, you worship the Trinity. They consider the Trinity idolatry. And so they call for you to be killed. I've even recorded rabbis saying that. It calls for the death penalty. So it's kind of disturbing because George H.W. Bush signed legislation that honored this rabbi, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who was the seventh rabbi of the Chabad organization. And this Chabad organization is growing by leaps and bounds. I call them a mafia because I've read and seen some of their members talk about how they had a intelligence network during the Cold War in Russia and in Ukraine. And this rabbi was born in Ukraine, so there's a definite connection there as well. But this rabbi Schneerson, George H.W. Bush wrote this legislation, and now there's a holiday each year honoring him and honoring the Noahide laws. Now, that doesn't mean that they've been implemented, but it's pretty, pretty scary to think about since they're so strict and so authoritarian. Also, Reagan, he implemented something even before that was connected to this rabbi. And I know there's been a couple of governors who've also written legislation that is, I guess, honored the Noahide laws and honored this rabbi. So it's really kind of scary to think about how these things could be snuck in and hardly anybody's noticing it.
And how it's implemented by these, you know, guys that are supposedly born again Christians. I don't know if the born again Christians worship the Trinity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. It's crazy what all's, I don't mean to get us off track. It's such a big,
no,
it's such a big subject.
Good stuff.
These Noahide laws, when were they implemented in modern times?
No, they claim that they were handed to Noah during I think it was before the flood, and supposedly his offspring was to adhere to these laws.
But
that's one of the oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say George H.W. Implemented them? Is that what you said?
No, he didn't. He didn't recognize. Implement them. So he set this day aside, and it's under an education bill for this rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and he's the seventh rabbi of this Chabad synagogue, and it's a very popular synagogue. It's the only Jewish synagogue that they actually have people that go out and try to convert people into Judaism. As far as I know, it's the only one.
Is it Israeli or is it domestic?
It's here. It's based here. I think it was started in Ukraine, if I'm not mistaken. He was born in Ukraine, and it's huge in Ukraine, Russia, huge in Florida. Like they have a bunch of synagogues. I've seen them when I've been down there.
So it's like, are they like Jewish mega churches?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And they bring in, when you start to investigate them, one of the most interesting things I thought is they have a lot of money and they have bought real estate all over the United States. You wouldn't believe how much real estate that they own.
So are they're like an evangelical Jewish church or Jewish synagogue?
They're an Orthodox, like hardcore or, you know, pretty
Yeah, but like, I mean, I guess to say evangelical, are they like trying to convert people and things like that?
Yeah, they do. I forget what they call them. I'm blanking on it, but what they like to do is they hire a married couple, young married couple, and they send them out, and their whole purpose is to go and try and convert other people into Orthodox Judaism.
Even goy?
No.
just Jews.
They generally don't want any non-Jews.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
So would they, are they Ashkenazi?
Yeah, I would assume so from him being from Ukraine. That would make sense. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
There could be a Khazarian aspect to that. I don't know enough about that whole
Yeah,
subject.
that's a weird that you got to talk to Ron New, from New England about that or something like that. That's some
Yeah.
wild stuff. And that gets into all sorts of crazy things. Like I've heard Orthodox Christian guys talk about that and how it's, has a lot to do with what's going on with the war in Ukraine right now. So.
Yeah, it's actually, I've talked to Ron. He's supposed to come on my show here in a couple of weeks, so I'm really looking forward to that. He seems to know a lot about that.
It's all that stuff, Kievan Rus and all that stuff. It's pretty cool to know about, but it's such a slog to get through all that and even start to
Oh
be
yeah.
able to figure anything out. So,
Oh yeah, for sure.
have you ever heard that theory or seen the footage? Isn't there aren't there like two Kabbalist like rabbis at the JFK assassination, and a lot of people think that it was a Kabbalah, religious ceremony.
You know, I don't know about that. You got me interested, so I'll
You
have to
should get
check that out.
talk to Corey Hughes also.
Okay, yeah. I think I heard him on
He goes
a show
hard.
recently. Very interesting. Very
Yeah.
interesting. Yeah.
He knows a lot about Israel and a lot about JFK, so. It's
Well, I did.
and he just came out with a book, so he'd be down to come on with you, I bet.
Awesome. Yeah, I did see you may have seen the clip a few months ago going around. I don't remember the guy's name, but he's one of I think he's considered the JFK biographer. And he said in his interview that he thinks it was the Israeli government that assassinated JFK because he had really, like, there was something that the Israeli government was doing. I think it was to
He was
another
gonna
country.
take away their nukes or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. Yeah. And yeah, so he says that that's, I mean, that's his opinion, which should hold some sway, I would think, since he's the biographer. But you know, it didn't seem to bother RFK Jr. because he is definitely kind of backing the Zionists. So,
Yeah, just to put it lightly,
yeah,
he's out there waving a flag and stuff with that one guy with the podcast. I forget, like Shmuley or Shlomo or whatever his name is. I forget.
not
But
sure.
Deborah, what are you thinking so far?
That I thought I knew a lot about Judaism. I don't think I know anything. I was, looking into more like, trying to prepare for today, looking more into, I looked way back into, how Israel was established from, where it came from. And, but yeah, I know very, very, very little about the religion I was raised in.
Well, you know,
But
I
you
don't
were
want
raised pretty, secularly, though, correct?
There was the Orthodox, the conservative, and the Reformed. And
to.
my family was reformed, which was the more modern, is the way I understood it.
Yeah, that's the way I understand it as well. I think, as far as I can tell, the conservative is just more of they were trying to kind of where reform was kind of trying to kind of fit in with Europe and kind of get along, and they kind of dropped a lot of those weird Talmudic laws and traditions that, you know, that other people would say that's crazy. We don't want that in our country because, like I said, some of these things are inhumane. And then conservative kind of did the same thing in America, from what I can understand, tried to kind of make it so Judaism would be more accepted readily in America. And that's one of the things that I've kind of realized is, and this is just my opinion, I believe that there's probably been a lot of times where, because the whole Talmudic system, they want, even the Orthodox today, I've heard that there's no-go zones in New York in the Orthodox community. And I've seen videos where people would go that are non-Orthodox and walk through one of the communities, and they are assaulted and spit on and everything else. You know, so you don't hear a lot about that, but they want to govern themselves. They don't want to adhere to American laws, just like Sharia law. We used to hear about Sharia law and the Muslims and how strict it is, which I believe it is. I read a little bit about it, but the Talmudic laws are way more numerous, and they even have sub laws.
You see it a lot in Mormonism as well, because a lot of those Mormon guys in like the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s were like big in the libertarian community, because they were all protesting tax laws and stuff, saying like, oh, these tax laws don't. I mean, we both kind of come from that area, and have, I think, graduated onto different things since then. Odd man.
Yeah.
But like they were big in the, what do they call it? The tax, I forget what they called it, but yeah, that's what a lot of Mormon guys, because they were saying like, we obey the law of God.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And so a lot of these, the push for these Talmudic laws and wanting to govern themselves outside of the societies they lived in, I think has caused them a lot of trouble. Unfortunately, it's caused average Jews a lot of trouble, because this is one of the things I try to put forth in my show, is a lot of this propaganda and the fear-mongering and the divisiveness that comes out of like the ADL and these types of people, it's also to keep regular Jews under control. Just like our government tries to scare us to death, especially after 9/11 with Muslims and different things like that, they need to keep people kind of in fear and on edge and always ready to retaliate. They want them to think the whole world's against them, and the only people that are out for them are these rabbis and the things that they're teaching. So it goes two ways. You know, these people in control benefit from keeping people divided and scared. You know, it's same old story going back probably thousands of years. So I try to make that point in my show, you know,
as a lot of people. It's so hard to get into, because if you get into that and then you say like, what's being used to make them have that mindset from the time they're a little kid, and it's what happened in the 40s in Poland and Germany, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's always got to be something that's led with, and it can't be questioned. Anything about it can't be questioned. Like if someone tried to question the numbers and say it's less than it is, like, wouldn't that be a happy thing if you're a Jewish person to be like, oh my gosh, they're only killed 3 million. But if you say anything about that, it's not good news for you.
I've noticed with Trump, DeSantis, and Biden even recently, they passed more legislation saying that it's to prevent anti-Semitic speech. But what I believe they're doing is they're pushing it to be eventually so strict that you can't critique the Israeli government whatsoever. That's where going.
Yeah. Abby Martin, who's a socialist, I'm not a fan of her politics in any way, but she's like one of the ones that's going the hardest against Israel. And I think she got in like big trouble in Georgia or something like that for showing her movie and promoting the BDS, which is there's this movement, Deborah, called BDS, and it stands for Boycott, Divest, Sanction. And it's like outlawed to promote. I don't even know how it's outlawed, but it's supposed to be, you know, just to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel. And to even talk about it in some states and on college campuses is against the law.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I brought up, I think, in my last show. You know, especially with I pick on the conservatives a lot because I was in that world, you know, and I still have a lot of traditional beliefs, but I just feel like the conservatives are just, you know, they're phony. They just use these beliefs, and the liberals do the same thing to their people as well. But I just feel like these conservatives are just scumbags. Conservatives,
they don't conserve anything. At least, at least the progressives progress.
You know? Right. Exactly. Exactly. But, I feel like, you know, they say they're for free speech, but don't say anything bad about the Israeli government. They say they're for free markets, but you better not boycott any Israeli businesses. You know, they say that all corporate media is fake news, but as long as the media is pro-Israel and anti-Palestinian, they're believing every word. You know, they say they're for less spending, but they cannot give enough of the Americans' tax money to the Israeli government, which is already one of the richest countries in the world. And I always tell people, it's the size of New Jersey. We give them $3.8 billion a year. 8 plus billion in loan guarantees. Biden somehow gave them 8 more billion, I think the same day Hamas got through the gates or whatever. How do they do that fast?
The paraglider day.
Yeah. I mean, they don't do anything fast, but they can, you know, get this 8 million billion together immediately. And they're already planning another aid package. And they do, I did a show and talked about how much money they make in Israel in tourism. It was unbelievable. I want to say it was 6 trillion a year, but I could be wrong about that. It was a crazy amount.
Just like the religious tourism and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, they're like the one of the world's biggest arms exporters, Little Israel.
IWI is a good brand.
Yeah,
They make a good AR-15, man.
You know, they're one of the. I was looking a while back, and they
Uzi.
Are. Oh, yeah, Uzi.
Uzi's an Israeli brand.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Uzi, wow. 9mm Uzi. That's an Israeli gun.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah, I'm all for them in their arms. Making stuff, they make good stuff.
And yeah, like on the, I looked on the NASDAQ, and they're like very high up on the NASDAQ. They got all these huge Western companies there. I read that they export arms to like 130 other countries. You know, you just keep on reading and reading how well they are off financially. Why is America $33 trillion in debt giving that kind of money to Israel, which is already rich?
I wonder, you know, how many of those countries that they export arms to are the ones that they're saying that they're are threatening them as well, you know, to just yeah. to justify. Well, they have their arms.
They have arms.
Yeah.
I do too. I do too. And, you know, I looked, I want to do a show on it one day, but, you know, all through the, I think the 70s, Israel armed Iran and armed Iraq, I think in the early 80s, but they, when I started looking at the, how much they armed Iran, I was blown away, and America armed them as well. So, you know, it's just this history of building up your own enemy. You know, we know that they basically created Hamas by trying to hire, I think it was the Muslim Brotherhood, fund the Muslim Brotherhood to fight
the PLO, right?
Right, exactly. So you see this blowback. You know, I think everybody's seen the Ron Paul video clip where he's explaining that whole thing about how
Trying to explain it to Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So Deborah, are you familiar with blowback? We can explain it real quick. Blowback is, you know, we go over and we bomb Iraq and blow up some, you know, 12-year-old boy's little sister. It's like, what do you think he becomes when he's 16? You know, that's blowback.
Yeah.
Terrorist. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and it would happen here. I would do the same thing, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I was saying, yesterday, I think it was after this whole, what looks like it's going to be a genocide. There's not going to be a place on earth that's going to be safe to go to anymore, because can you imagine any of the survivors that are younger and young enough to, become terrorists? They're going to do it. I mean, they're making the world unsafe by the way they're carrying this whole thing out. I mean,
well, it's also scary to think that Israel's going to do this. And I'm really behind the ball on what's actually keeping this really, really fragile peace out there. And I guess like we paid off Egypt back in the day and told them we'll give them a certain amount of money every year if they don't, you know, mess with Israel anymore. But the fact that Israel is just this tiny little enclave of non-Muslim people in this whole Muslim area, like what's to stop them from just getting, you know, finally we've had enough and mm-hmm. them doing something. And does that happen when, as the boomers like to say, Israel turns the Gaza Strip into glass, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Israel's got nukes, so you know that's the one thing that would probably maybe keep Egypt from doing that. But
Iran's 2 weeks away from having nukes is what I've heard since, you know, 2003. So
right, right, yeah, and it's crazy. Oh gosh, I lost train of thought there. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So it's another thing that I've looked at in, especially considering what's going on right now. You know, you go back to the 70s and the UK, Israel, and the United States had a plan called the Greater Middle East Plan. And they wanted to Balkanize the Middle East and give a bunch more land to Israel, of course, but Balkanize these other countries. And they changed that name to call it the New Middle East Plan. And I think the Carnegie Endowment or one of the Carnegie organizations wrote this whole white paper on how to do it. And Condoleezza Rice, I think in 2006, George Bush administration, she came out and presented that to the public. But even going back farther than that, Theodore Herzl was the father of Zionism. In his second diary, he's got these two books that are his diaries that are huge. He's got a map in there that the Zionists had written out, and it's the land that they wanted to be Israel. You know, this was pre the modern state, and it included Egypt or most of Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, a whole bunch of areas of the Levant. So it was a huge chunk of the Middle East. So they have that plan. I think it's always been in play because Israel tried to take out Lebanon and it was a failure, but you know, they've been at war with Egypt and that didn't work out. But I think that even going back even farther than that, this is one of the crazy things that I've learned. One of the craziest things that I've come across, and I've got videos of these various rabbis talking about it. So these rabbis, they'll twist Old Testament scripture and then they'll mix it with their mystical books like the Zohar and whatnot. And they'll say things that happened or places from a long time ago, you know, thousands of years ago. They'll equate that with a place here, you know, in the current era. And they say that the West, Rome, and Christianity as a whole is modern Esau, Edom. Sometimes they say Amalek, and there is an Old Testament, I think there's two verses that talks about wiping out Amalek, wiping their name off the face of the earth or something like that. And some also equate the West with Amalek, and they actually recite those two verses about wiping Amalek away on Purim in one of the other holidays. I forget the other. It's one of the holidays right before Purim. But these Orthodox, man, they teach that America is going to die. The West, the whole West is going to die. And they even kind of laugh about how all these problems that are happening in the Middle East are causing these refugees to pour into Europe and even into America, and how it has to happen. It's God's will. And the West will die. The whole world will be controlled from Israel, and the whole world will become Israel, basically, and they'll have their kind of Eden restored. And I swear to God, they say this, every Jew will have 2,800 Gentiles underneath him, not a slave as far as, now I have read that too, is like a horrible slave that does all the work, but what most of them say is a Torah slave who will kind of be under each Jew, Jewish rabbi, whatever, and he will teach them Torah the way it's supposed to be meant. And there'll be this utopia. So when I look at this big picture of what these guys are teaching, and I think one of the reasons this also is important to remember is because right now the government over there in Israel, you have the Likud party, which is Netanyahu's party, which is also always considered right-leaning, but you also have another party that they've merged with called the Israel Power Party. That's what it is in English. I forget the Hebrew name. And that is a hardcore fundamentalist group, mostly ran by these fundamentalist rabbis. And so these are the kind of people that believe that kind of stuff, and they are trying to make it happen. So I don't think, you know, if you tried to tell the average person, Christian, or, you know, even the average reform and conservative Jew, they would probably not have a clue about this stuff, but they're trying to make this a reality.
Yeah. I've seen documentaries. I think I it might maybe even like buy stuff about some of those guys, in Israel. And, one interesting documentary I saw was it kind of explained, the whole settlement thing. But it's because these Jew these Orthodox Jews from Brooklyn were going out and like creating settlements in like the surrounding counties of New York, like Westchester County and stuff. And they were going up to these towns of like 5,000 people and using like, lawyers and the zoning laws and stuff, and building like these huge condominium complexes and moving in like 5,000 people, like doing what these like what the ANCAPs always talked about, like going and finding these tiny towns and then moving, building these giant condo complexes and moving like 25, 30,000 Orthodox
Oh.
Jews into them and just changing the whole town.
Well, yeah,
Yeah. I
that's
can't
yeah, that
remember what the documentary is. I saw it on, it was on Amazon. I saw it. It was really, really upsetting and interesting. Like, we don't have any really reference to what those kind of people are like, but they don't seem like they're that great and fun to be around. Like, they don't really want anything to do with anybody else, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's another thing that surprised me is the tribalism. Like, this is old school ancient tribalism that's never left, and I don't think that the average Westerner can even comprehend it. I mean, we're told all, we've been told since the War on Terror about how tribalistic and how backwards and savage the Muslims are. This is exactly the same thing. And what's funny is I've heard from several rabbis, and I also read in that book I was mentioning earlier, The Divine Code. They say in there that, oddly enough, as bad as they seem to hate the Muslims, the Orthodox don't consider the Muslims as idol worshipers, but the Christians are because of the Trinity. So I'm like, wow. I've even seen a couple of them say that Allah is the same God that the Jews worship. Maybe that's true. I don't know. I mean, I would have to really look into that to understand it better, but it's just odd that they will do what they're doing to the Muslims. Think about what they would do to idol worshipers if they ever get the chance. And I think that's what they, from everything I can read, that's what they want to do eventually. What they're doing to the Palestinians is going to happen to,
It's just a
because they
warm up.
laugh about Europe. They laugh about what's happening to Europe with the Muslim migration there and how everything's falling apart. That's what's coming here, man. I mean, and the sad thing is, all these neocons are blaming the wrong people for it. They have no idea who's really trying to push this stuff.
Yeah.
And
Well, we
one of the
know
things,
what
go
the
ahead.
neocons are and where they came from. They're Bolsheviks who got expelled out of Russia, you know? So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. A lot of them are, Ashkenazi Jews. I mean,
Yep,
it's just
they
the
are,
way it
they're
is.
all of them.
What was Bill Kristol's father, or Irving Kristol? I
Irving
think he
Kristol.
coined the term neocon, if I'm not mistaken. At least he's got a book that called that. Yeah, I looked into that one group, the Congress for Cultural Freedom, which was created, I want to say, late 50s. And they were created by the CIA. And most of the people, the two founders were Jewish, Ashkenazi Jews, but most of the top people were Jewish, and they were Trotskyites for the most part. And so they basically created this whole organization to go and write magazines and articles, and they were producing movies and theater and musicals that had kind of pro-Western kind of themes to them, which
Well,
that's not
yeah, I mean,
necessarily bad, but there was but it was very liberal themes, you know.
yeah, look at are you talking about like Berlin, like Weimar Berlin?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they had a transgender clinic there.
Yeah,
They had a transgender
exactly.
clinic that was a gay brothel and a trans and place where they were slicing people up.
Yeah,
It's nuts.
it's crazy because the CIA was always considered, and I always thought they are super hardcore conservative, yet they funded this group to go out and spread all this, super liberal propaganda all over Europe and other places, even in the Middle East. So, that's another false thing that we've been told, that the CIA is super conservative. There's probably aspects of that, but.
Yeah. Is any of this, could any of this happen without aid from America?
Well, I will say this, and I've noticed this in the last few months on Boomer Book, Facebook.
Yeah.
some people call it. So because of what I talk about a lot, about every third ad is an ad from a tax exempt group, a 501c3 that's solely dedicated to sending money to Israel in some form or fashion. There are dozens upon dozens of those. So I think it could, because that's basically what they did pre the, you know, the modern state of Israel. They had all these organizations that they started forming, and they had all these different newspapers too, that they were putting information in. So they know how to network better than any group I've ever seen in my life. And all these, like I've even seen since this whole war got kicked off, they're taking money up for the IDF for like bulletproof jackets and different things like that. And I have to wonder too, if maybe is this money even going to what they say it's going to? Because again, that's already a very rich country.
Yeah.
So is that just a scam as well? I don't know, but there are many, many organizations that could probably fund and do fund probably a lot of nefarious things that we'll never know, because they hide under the veil of philanthropy.
Yeah. And it's all based off of and dependent on that trauma programming from the 40s, you know?
Yeah, so absolutely. Crazy. Absolutely.
We've had you for like an hour and a half. We could probably do a part two. We didn't even get into the Jew Nazi alliance. So, I mean,
oh yeah. The Havara agreement. Yeah.
Is Ashkenazi spelled Ashkenazi?
Yes.
No. Okay. Very interesting.
It is. Oh,
well, I most of the time when I see it, it has the Z. I have seen it with an S though, but most of the time I've seen it, it's with a Z, and that always made me was like, what is that? What's going on with that?
Well, I guess let's check in with Deborah. She's been relatively quiet. Yeah. Deborah, as a member of the tribe, as is Odd Man, is this like upsetting or hard to hear, or do you feel ganged up on? Or
oh God, no! It's hard to hear because it's just so hideous. But yeah, I was always defensive about being a Jew. The town that I grew up in, you know, there weren't that many Jewish families, and I got teased a lot and made fun of a lot and blah blah blah. So I just was raised knowing about the Israel history that was presented to me by my Jewish family, and so always was like, yeah, they're poor Israel's getting picked on again. What did they ever do to deserve this? Well, now I know, you know, they did plenty to deserve this. But
you know, want to know a funny story, Odd Man, is when Deborah and I first started the show, I asked her if she thought like racism was a big problem in the United States. She said yes, and I asked her for an example, and she said, well, there's a lot of people who want to start kind of like a white only place in America. And I was like who? And then she told me it was like her Jewish relatives in Louisiana who wanted to do that.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Is it true?
I don't remember. I honestly do not remember that.
No. Yeah.
But there's a lot I don't remember.
It's interesting to think about that, like the only real ethno state in the world is the Jewish one, you know?
And you know, it was.
And I wouldn't have a problem with it if they hadn't displaced other people and weren't dependent on my money to make it happen, you know?
Right.
If they wanted to do that and just leave everybody alone and F off, and you guys could all go there. Odd Man could go, you could go. I don't have the card. I wouldn't be allowed in. I'd feel you left out, but you know, that would be just the way it would be, you know. Just like if the white guys like me wanted to do it at the top in the panhandle of Idaho, you know, they should be allowed to do it too. But like,
yeah, the Pentagon said today that over 2,000 US troops are on heightened preparations.
Yeah, well, let's remember what we talked about at the start of the episode. We don't know anything yet. And like I said, in 20 years, we'll be like saying, remember when we were talking about how all the stupid stuff we endorsed or thought was right? You know, maybe I'll be a Zionist in 20 years. Who knows? You know,
But Odd Man, this has been really awesome, and your knowledge on the subject is great. Everybody go out and listen to, I think you started in like the summer of 2022 or something, and it's been ongoing ever since.
Yeah.
All the those we do not speak of episodes, plus everything else you do, your wealth of knowledge on secret societies and parapolitics. So tell everybody a little bit about the show, and then let's get you guys out of here.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. It's been fun, and I'd love to come back and talk more about some of the other aspects of this anytime.
Okay, let me
Yeah,
get, yeah,
so
let me get caught up on a couple more episodes, and we'll do it again.
okay, cool.
But yeah, tell everybody.
Yeah, I talk about a lot of secret society stuff I've done in the past. Honestly, I would rather not talk about this issue. It's not that fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy learning, but I went through a lot of depression since I've been doing this, solely because this is such a super serious, depressing issue, and it never ends. But I've done a lot of stuff on secret societies, and I think I went a step farther than most, especially like on Freemasonry. I would check out the last probably four shows I've done on that. I think I've been able to kind of answer some of the things that were only considered conspiracy, or people just would say certain things but never like expand on it. But yeah, I like to talk about that kind of stuff, and a little bit of as you said, parapolitics. I did a series on Ukraine that ended up being was called Whose War Is It Anyway? I can't remember how many episodes I did, but a handful or more at least, because there were so many aspects that I'd never heard of. And then I did a couple in Russia too, to be fair, and try to pull out some information that a lot of people weren't talking about on that too. So yeah, check out the show. It's called The Oddcast, featuring The Odd Man Out, FT, The Odd Man Out. So it's on pretty much every podcast platform, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at underscore the odd man out. And if you look in the link tree, it's got my BitChute and my Facebook and other stuff like that.
Yeah, I think you've been on with us like four or five times, which might be the you might be in the lead for
Yeah, I think
most
that's,
appearances. So,
yeah, it's awesome.
but congratulations on being a grandpa. That's really exciting, man. And I think you're
Thank
really going
you.
to enjoy it. You'd be a cool grandpa to have. So,
Thank you. I hope so.
Deborah, final thoughts?
Let's return to this.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get back on it. And yeah, everybody go out and support the Odd Man. I gotta go feed the dogs. They're going crazy. But thank you guys so much for being here. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. All right, love you guys.
That's
Bye.
good. Thanks.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass to lay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're gonna be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.